Hey, nonprofit leader, you do awesome nonprofit things. And our friends at Pro Resources do awesome HR things. Now, why is that important? Because you have too many things to do than worry about payroll and compliance and benefits and admin and workers' comp. You've got donors to get, you've got clients to serve, and you've got a community to make awesome. So let our friends at Pro Resources help you. Go to ProResourcesHR.com. Learn about how they can help your organization not worry about all the HR things. They've got you covered. Go to ProResourcesHR.com. Let them help you be awesomer at HR while you become awesomer as a nonprofit. ProResourcesHR.com or call them at 800-776-4671 and make sure you mention Do Good Better. Get your special nonprofit rate. Hey there, friends. Before we get to a brand new episode of the official Do Good Better podcast, we want to thank you, the listener, for subscribing and sharing with all of your nonprofit friends. Most importantly, we need to be thanking the sponsors to this very show. Hey, if you're in the market for a CRM system that makes your life easier, there is no better item in your fundraising toolbox than DonorDoc. DonorDoc is not only the premier sponsor to the show, it is the premier and intuitive CRM system that not only has everything you want, but has zero things you don't. No one needs complicated, especially when you wear 10,000 different hats at your nonprofit. So get DonorDoc and use Do Good Better at checkout and get a month free to try it out. Thanks, DonorDoc, for being an awesome sponsor. Hey, speaking of life being easier, fundraising is not. And as a listener to this podcast, I hope you found some insight and tips and tricks on how to make it a little less challenging. But if you're looking for a more content, more done-for-you templates, weekly support, and a community of other do-gooders like yourself to either commiserate, challenge, co-create, or celebrate with, join Do Good University. Hey, it's our brand new membership site. We have hours and hours of on-demand trainings, exclusive guest expert webinars, and access to the entire Do Good Better crew to answer all of your pressing questions. All of that is for an affordable monthly fee. So visit dogooduniversity.com or click the link in the show notes for details. Hey, get ready for another episode of the official Do Good Better podcast.
Welcome to the official Do Good Better podcast, where we help small and medium-sized nonprofits do good better. Join host Patrick Kirby as he chats about the latest nonprofit trends, challenges, and success stories. Plus, you'll get actionable advice to help you be even awesomer. If you're a nonprofit professional, volunteer, or supporter, this show is for you. We'll tackle all the big topics like fundraising, marketing, and volunteer management. Our only goal? To bring you the information and inspiration you need to take your organization to the next level. So grab that giant caffeinated or adult beverage and get ready to do good better.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the official Do Good Better podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Kirby. And of course, we talk with people who are going to help our small and medium-sized nonprofits do good better. Hey, I got a question for you today. Sports. What on earth does sports, specifically swimming, have to do with your nonprofit? I bet you can't make the connection. I know I'm gonna, because I got a really amazing guest who's gonna talk about how parent-run boards, specifically on sports teams, has everything to do with what you are doing and dealing with at your boards, at your own nonprofits. Excited yet? Yeah, you should be. I'm stoked to welcome our guest, Renata Porter. She is the founder of Your Sport Resource. Renata, welcome to the official Do Good Better podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Listen, it's a weird intro and it's a weird combination. And it feels like we're going to force a round peg, small hole or square hole. We're not. This is about as aligned as people can get. So I'm very excited for the conversation, specifically around burnout in leadership positions, specifically on the board. We're going to take at it from a different angle today. So buckle up, everybody who's listening. It's going to be great. But before we get started with that, I would like you to introduce yourself to the audience. So could you give us a 5,000 foot view on who you are, what you do, and why we're talking today?
All right. Awesome. Well, I'm the founder of Your Sports Resource. We are a consulting firm that works with swim clubs across the country. which are, I would say, probably about 80% nonprofit board-run teams. And we work with them on the operations, the business side. So I would say I'm a business consultant. I'm just highly specialized within the sport of swimming. I come from that background, have many, many years of experience in business and running major departments and teams and things like that. And when we moved back home to the US from New Zealand, I started my own consulting firm, and I was working with small businesses and startups and things like that. And I had a friend of mine call me and say, hey, she was president of a swim club that I swam with growing up. And she was like, hey, I'd love to apply some of these principles to my club. And that was it. That was it for me. I did it the first time. I was like, oh my God, there's such a need for this. And so it took me about a year and a half, but over about a year and a half, I slowly switched my business over to now I'm completely and solely focused on sports teams. Right now, I'm solely focused on swimming, but I do want to open that up to other teams as well.
I love it. Sports. Yeah, again, most of the teams that you're that working with, most clubs, small nonprofits, right? And usually they are parent driven. Yes. And again, those are the ones who are most aligned and the most desire for the success of the organization and the club. Now, that gets a little hairy because parents have their own kid agendas based on personal agendas. I think a lot of nonprofits can understand that too, especially when they have parents of individuals that they're serving or individuals that the nonprofit serves in the space. There is a personal issue to why they give. We're going to get to all of that, but let's talk a little bit about what you are seeing as it pertains to just burnout in general. We're seeing in the nonprofit realm people actually just leaving the industry altogether because they're just like, screw it. I don't want to deal with this anymore. For-profit's got a way better salary, way better benefits. I need to leave. From a volunteer board perspective, what are you seeing as it pertains to burnout?
Well, I think it's probably the same thing as far as like way too much work, way more than I thought I was signing up for. But I think it starts really, it's grounded in two things. And maybe it's the same thing. But usually we call it the wet and the dry side. So running the business and coaching. So usually the wet and dry side don't align, or they feel like they don't align. And that's because they're both kind of running with their own agendas. So sometimes, a lot of times, the head coaches are really struggling with their board because they feel like they're not aligned as far as how they should operate as a business. The other side of it is previous boards have not taken their remit seriously. They don't understand that they're not just some kid's sports team. Like, no, dude, you're actually on the hook as the board president or the board treasurer if something goes really wrong with the organization. No, this is, you are running a business. Doesn't matter if you're getting paid for it or not. And so what happens is you kind of get people in there, like you say, who are can't put their board hat on and keep their parent hat on, and they don't make great decisions. They don't have the right skill set. And so why I said like previous boards haven't really done a good job at grounding what that board should do. They just rely on their bylaws instead of, okay, your bylaws are a great structure and that's where you start, but you need roles and responsibilities just like any other job. And you need, it needs to be specific for your organization. Like on my website, I have, this is what a board president should do, but that's going to vary because some of these clubs have thousands and thousands of members and multi-programs like life-saving water polo and diving, swim lessons. So they're really big. And some of these clubs only have like 80 members and they're only competitive swimming. So what that president's going to do is going to be a little bit different. So you do have to adapt it for your organization. But starting there, as far as what is this role? What is my responsibility? What's heading into the gray line that supersedes or bleeds into what the coach should be doing? And really ironing out how these two sides of the house, for us, wet and dry, can work effectively together so both sides are leading correctly, leading in the right way, and leading towards a plan, a goal, a vision, a future, right? And not just, you know, I always say staring at your feet and surviving day to day. I hate that. I want people to lift their heads and look forward.
it's expectations versus reality, right? I mean, you get like, oh, I'd like to be a part of the board, or you get suckered into being the board because nobody else is running. You get in there and you expect, I'm going to show up to a couple of meetings. I'm going to vote yay or nay on a couple of stuff. Yeah. The reality is, and like you mentioned too, a lot of these volunteer boards that don't have paid staff necessarily from a leadership position are required then to be all the heavy lifters. And now they're doing 10,000 different things, which again leads to the burnout. So a lot of organizations are probably nodding their head like, Jesus, this is exactly what I'm dealing with at my organization. Yeah. How do you begin to have the conversation, especially after a board has been in existence for a very long time? The beginning of the conversation of roles, responsibilities, and expectations is a very, I'll say, precarious path to begin. Journey starts with the first step, right? So what do we do first in order to have those conversations without making everyone so infuriated that you're actually going to put parameters and benchmarks and frameworks together that doesn't either call somebody out or whatever? There's so many nuances to this. What do we do first? How do we address these things?
I think the first thing is you need to get out of assumptions, because everybody comes to their role, their position, whatever they think they're, whatever they've signed up for. And they have their own take on what they're supposed to be doing. So what I usually start with is board training. Now, let's get a bit of reality about what your actual responsibilities are. And then let's move out of, you know, the compliance piece and get into what should your responsibilities be for your organization. And then that means, you know, doing the roles and responsibilities piece. But it's also a really, like, a big thing that I do in those meetings is I ask the board, I want to meet with them without the coach. That way I can be a little bit more honest and I can say, get your head out of your ass. You know, sorry for my cussing, but like, seriously, you know, you guys have to set the tone and the path, and you have to understand that you have to align if you want the organization to move forward. This is not a finger wagging exercise. This is not a, like, you need to follow what I say because I'm the board president. No. You have members that you need to serve. So everything that the leadership team does from both sides of the house needs to be serving the membership. And I think a lot of times, and this is not just about boards, I think a lot of time head coaches forget about that too. Like, they're like, no, I'm the boss. I mean, it should be my way. Sorry, this is not your business. You have signed up to work in or be a volunteer in the nonprofit space. You have members that you have to report to. And every decision needs to be in the best interest of the business and the members. So it's really, I really work from trying to get them in that mindset and that headspace. And then it's like, okay, let's set the groundwork for the future of your organization. What is this role? What do they need to do? And how does that work with their coaches? What does that mean for the parents? And how many hours is it? I think a lot of our clubs do volunteers a disservice because, A, they ask someone to step up into a role. They don't know what that role actually is, so they assume. And two, they feel like, it's just a couple hours a month. No, depending on the role, it could be a full-time freaking job. You know, so I think we do ourselves a disservice by not actually explaining what skills are needed, how many hours it's going to be, and what the expectations are up front. So I try to get these boards going, you're going to be the ones that are going to be pivotal and change. You're going to make the change. So let's lay the groundwork. So at the next elections, we can start shoulder tapping, going after people who have the skill sets we've said that we needed, whether it's on the board or subcommittees or whatever it is. And then it is a more purposeful and strategic approach to leading the organization. Burnout happens when you don't have any of that and you got one person who loves what they're doing and wants to save the club and is doing all the work, and everybody else is an empty shirt or just showing up for the accolade on LinkedIn, or just has the best intentions but doesn't have the right skill set for that particular role. You know, the easiest one to point out is the treasurer, right? They have to have some type financial knowledge to be sitting in that role. And it can't just be, oh yeah, I do my home budget. And I know that sounds really rude, but I can't tell you how many times I've seen it. Yeah. No, they actually have to have some kind of background, even just in the minimal bookkeeping perspective. It's okay if you hire an accountant and all that to do your work, but they have to understand projections and budgeting, and like they've got to have that skill set. And when you bring people in that don't have the right skill sets, you get what you deserve. You deserve. So listen, everything that I just said, I said really harsh and curt, and I'm not that way in those meetings, but I start with the basics and then I move into the heavy relationship stuff, right? Because a lot of times when the wet and the dry side don't align, even if they like don't know it, but they are rowing in the same direction, they don't align because they're saying things differently. They've like built up walls because they don't like how somebody speaks to somebody else or something they said to a kid on deck or whatever. And so the next step is to really build that relationship. And I tell you, the relationship piece is what really creates burnout and people just run away. It's like, I've got all these tasks to do. And then I have this person that I don't really appreciate on the board that we can't seem to align with, or at least head in the same direction, whether we disagree or I don't agree with the coaches, whatever it is. So that relationship is a bigger piece on the burnout.
Oh, I think it's people that are the problem. 99% of the cases, right? I mean, you can write down a nice little policy, but if somebody sounds like they're just not having a good time, or they're approaching it as a little more passive aggressive, and you've got to ask, you know, random questions like, is this hurtful or helpful? And you got to start and pause every time they bring something up because you don't know where they're coming from. I think people are that particular problem. So when you get to this point, and again, as you're listening to this as a nonprofit leader, swim club, that coach, you're the executive director. You know, when you're the board member, you're a board member. I mean, these are all interchangeable verbiage, same situation, same bit. So I think everybody's sort of aligned. It's that person who might realize or might not realize they're not in the right place. And I think people, especially when it comes to founders or original members, the realization that they might not be in the right place anymore because either the organization has grown to a point where they are no longer, that original vision is so much smaller.
Yeah.
There's a delicate balance to go and, all right, well, here's the direction we're going. We want to just make sure that you feel as if you still got a place here. But if you don't, that's okay because you've taken it to X, Y, and Z. How do you begin to address some of the potential changes of personnel on a volunteer board, especially when it comes to those founding members?
Well, I think, again, I'd like to just go back to saying that if you have a current board that is focused on what the board's going to do for the future, you kind of avoid you're still going to have heavy personalities, but it's more purposeful in the people that you're bringing on the board. You're bringing on people who have skill sets, who can get stuff done, who have the time to be able to do work and that type of thing. As far as having individuals who may be dead weight, founder or not, I think the conversations need to be something like, hey, listen, we're headed toward this vision and this goal. And that means that this role requires X, Y, and Z. And you know what? If this role is different than when you thought it was, or if you originally thought that you could fulfill the role and you can't do that anymore, that is okay. Like, there's no shame in that, right? So it's just time to move on and open the seat for someone who can fill that role. It does not mean that the individual is deficient. It just means that it didn't work out. It didn't align. Or like you said, the business has really moved past that person's skill set, which they should, if they're a founder, they should feel amazing about what they've started, right? And to pass the baton on. Hey, let's go.
I love that as almost the entry point into a conversation that maybe is a little bit, it'll be weird to have. congratulations. You got us to a point where we are so forward from wherever we started. Mm. Like, we couldn't have gotten from point A to point B without you. My God, look at this. And, yeah. and you almost approach it from a sense of awe and wonder and gratitude and authentic appreciation that they did the thing. A lot of people, and again, I think when you approach some of the founders' pieces here too, is giving reverence to them, regardless if they are a pain in the ass or not.
Yeah.
Give reverence to them that they had the audacity to start and they had the audacity to build this from the ground up. And that takes a lot of strength and will and just maybe even just, stubbornness. Whatever that is.
Well, it takes ego to start a business. You got to have a little bit of ego behind you. And if you couple that with the business was started by a coach who also needs a whole different level of ego, want them to have ego, right? But sometimes that ego gets in their way. They just need to know how to control it. And I think that's with everybody. But yeah, there's also ego attached to it. So sometimes it's really hard to detach.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
But I think you lead with that general appreciation on that.
Yes.
On that founding piece. And I think that begins the transition. That's wonderful. So they're on their way out. They sort of, how do you involve them with the selection of maybe even new board members? Or do you keep them on as like an ad hoc committee? How far away do you push? And again, that's probably personality-wise, different human beings have that. When you're bringing on new people, you've now written out your job expectations. You've got a little bit more clarity on the roles, the timing, et cetera. Now, who are you looking? Because I think there's two schools of thought. One, find, I think in the nonprofit specifically, the classic sense, which is maybe not necessarily membership, but it's door openers. Or technical skill sets on the board. Where do you lean? And I got my own biases, but like, where do you lean in to like try to fill holes or expanding board membership in order to get the best that you can possibly get?
I usually try to get the board to change their bylaws to include board members. Maybe it's the lower number. So let's say your board is 7 members. So maybe you only allow 3 that are non-parent board members. If the board is against that, then I highly push having strategic committees. Okay. I'll use a giant example, and not every club can do this, right? Working with the city to build a new pool is a massive specific skill set. You have to be able to work in the Capital Works space as a project manager or have been in that space or have the relationships to open the doors, like you said, to be able to get you in front of the city and the community and the businesses and that type of stuff. So I think that I try to get them to open up to the board to non-parent members simply from the perspective of getting skill set. It allows you to, at the time that you need certain things, you can pull in the right skill set because you're not always building a pool. You're not always doing X or Y. So you need that flexibility as you go through the election process to be able to bring on people for the vision or the strategy that you want to achieve in the next year to 2 years or 3 years. Now, that's a big assumption that this board is working effectively and they're actually looking down the road. You know, if they're not there yet, then it's about bringing people on with the skill sets, and they could be adjunct. They could be working on, they could be us. They could be, consultants that come in and go, okay, this is what you need. This is the next step. This is the next step. And then, okay, yeah, you're good. You're on your way. You know, just keep up. Don't deviate. Keep up with what the ground rules are. And then, you know, just add to it from there.
Yeah.
Did I answer your question?
No, I loved it. No, that's such good. Well, again, I think we limit ourselves to the only people that we can get on our board are somebody who has to have a direct connection with the cause. That's not necessarily the case. And in fact, like a lot of nonprofits and a lot of organizations too, want to have an expansion beyond their own little mini circle, right? Everybody's got their horse blinders on. I'm going to concentrate on my kid doing my stuff and doing this X, Y, and Z. That's where I think people have a lot of the hangups. And again, if we want to tell our story or increase the amount of people who know what we're doing over and over again, you want to get outside of your network. And it's okay yes. to do that. And I almost think that giving people permission to do that is half the damn battle, because yeah. they don't understand that that's even a doable thing.
A lot of times they don't even go back and ask their membership for specific skills because they don't even know what skills they need, right? They just go, okay, we're running elections, and they wait for somebody to volunteer. Well, who the hell is going to volunteer for something that they don't know anything about? Like, what do you need? What do you want? What are our objectives? So I think too, like once you get structured, then you're really coming from a place to where you can go shoulder tap. Or you can stand in front of your members if you have an annual meeting and go, hey, we're running for election. These are our goals for the next few years. These are the skills we need. If you match any of these skills, but maybe don't have the capacity to do the 20 hours a month or whatever, we're open to your skill set and we'll share the hours, right? So there's another area of being really flexible. I think having somebody that has a great skill set is only part of it. If they don't have the capacity, like the treasurer, if they don't have the capacity to do the monthly reports to keep you guys on track with how you're spending your money, well, they're no good.
Right.
Right. So it has to be a really good balance between skills and capacity. And then also think out of the box. How can we share this? If like we've got a really good skills person, but they can't do 20, they can only do 10. Okay. How do we supplement? How do we help that person? But what this means is that the current board has to do the groundwork and they have to be very purposeful in who they go out and shoulder tap to come on to future boards. And it's not just about, hey, we're running elections. Who wants to put their hands up? I mean, this is running a business. This is not just some silly sport, you know?
Well, and again, I think a lot of nonprofit leaders, either coaches or executive directors, they don't think that they can have a direct involvement with that leadership team. And in fact, they should, because mm-hmm. you're going to be working with them and getting along with them and not getting along with them. Who can you have a conversation with that doesn't annoy you? And like, who's got a personality that you can vibe with and sees that vision long term? If you are leaving it to chance and you're leaving it to just a rando who loves the idea but doesn't understand mission, vision, values, where you're going to go, et cetera, they're not going to be a good fit at all. You do have the luxury of trying to find and meet with people who would make your organization better. So please go and do that. And I guess that leads up to another question is, how do you suggest that leadership, whether it's board or executive, reach out to either members or supporters? What's the best way to do that in order to engage them for potential leadership roles or just updates? Because I think a lot of people say, well, we don't want to burden them with a whole bunch of decisions we're making, or they think that decisions are done behind closed doors and there's not a lot of opportunity to do whatever. Like, is it surveys? Is it face-to-faces? Is it small meetings? Like, where do you find the best ROI on time given to engaging with membership, supporters, donors, et cetera?
Well, because you're in sports, the wet side, the coaches are constantly communicating with their families, right? On the dry side, I really, and this involves the coaches too, because most boards, the coaches on the board, they're just a non-voting member, obviously, but they provide feedback and input on how things are going.
Right.
I think that I recommend that the boards be as transparent as they can. And sometimes that's a really hard comfort level I got to get them past, right? So I think that making what minutes you can expose, so you don't, you know, if you're talking about employment issues, those have to be redacted, those have to stay behind. But I think expose your minutes so your members know what's happening. I think have certain amount of meetings a year to where you allow the public to come in for the first part. And then the last part, you talk about finance and maybe employment issues, if that's what you need to do. And then I think that the board should have a minimum of a quarterly report, state of the business type thing. So they understand what the board does. And that's like, that's a big issue. A lot of these clubs, these families have no idea what the board, they know there is a board and they know that they vote on the hiring and the firing of the coach, of the head coach, But what else do they do? Okay, manage our money, you know, but I don't know what they're doing with the money. So as far as I know, everybody always goes to the negative, right? They mismanage money. So I think the more that you can be transparent, then the more they say, oh, look, that was really smart what they did. They invested the money, so we have it down the line for X, Y, and Z. Or they're putting it aside for, I don't know, new lane lines or whatever it may be. So I think that the more that you, your board can be open and transparent about the work they do, then the easier it is to keep the membership engaged. Now, listen, I don't know about other sports, but swimming cannot operate off of without volunteers. Like it's heavy. Like there's a lot of meat. Swimming is a little bit different in that it's a year-round sport. There's a recreational side, but from competitive swimming, these kids are swimming twice a day. They're swimming, you know, upwards of 8-9 times a week, 2 hours at a time. Then they're traveling and competing probably in excess of 30 to 40 meets a year. So you can't do this without volunteers. Okay. And the parents are fried. They're tired. They don't want to give more of their time. Well, the only way that you're going to get them to pique their interest is by understanding the business and understanding how valuable their donation of time is, not only to allow those kids to compete in meets, but also to be part of a club that teaches them amazing values and life skills for the rest of their life. I mean, I owe all of my leadership ability to the fact that I was in a highly demanding sport all my childhood. You know, you learn a lot of things through that, right? And it's not just about keeping yourself organized and packing your bag. It's about teamwork. It's about relationships. It's about setting goals, you know? So the more transparent you can be, then the volunteers or the other membership can go, okay, I understand what's happening. I feel like I can add value in this little space. Let me talk to them like, hey, I can do this, you know? I even have 40 hours a week I can donate, and I'd be happy to do that, you know, but they won't do that if they don't understand what the board's doing, what their purpose is, and how you as a board and a team value that parent member. And I think that's really important. Culture is a huge thing, right? And because you're not being transparent and you don't have a really good culture, well, why would anybody be want to be engaged? You're going to have the apathetic parent that's like, screw you, I'm just dropping my kid off. I'll see you in 2 hours or 2.5 hours, right? So you don't want that.
No, again, this is so perfectly translated into every nonprofit ever, is that you don't have, you know, again, I think a lot of boards are very nervous about transparency because what if somebody says something, or what if we show something that they raise a question of? Okay, well, mm-hmm. Why would they raise a question on the first place? That seems to be a little nefarious out of the gate. Also, people want to know. And I feel like we're at a point in time that being open and transparent is going to be the norm. You know, mm-hmm. Whether you're like, hey, I'm fundraising for X, Y, and Z. I'm not fundraising for just general funds. The general funds are going to do and allow us to pay our people more, our programs expansion, et cetera. Well, you're going to pay your people? Yeah. If we don't have people, we don't have programs, et cetera. You can be transparent to these conversations. And again, that's going to breed a culture of transparency, a culture of openness, a culture like that becomes, people want to join that. They feel comfortable that they're the safe place that they can voice an opinion. That's as long as you're not, you know, an a-hole about it, you can actually have these conversations that are a little more pointed with the leadership team about what you can do and the good you can do in the community, the good you can do for the team. So it all depends on that whole transparency piece. So I love that's a point of yours. And again, there will be people who said that's too much.
Because you're always going to have that complaining parent. You're always going to have like the bandwagon jumpers. But I tell them all the time, okay, you're trying to avoid bad situations. But the reason why those bad situations happen is because there's a void of information.
Yeah.
People make shit up because they don't know what's happening. They jump to conclusions. And even if it comes down to, It's really funny. I did a family survey with the club. We do member surveys so that way they can evaluate how the, you know, they get a net promoter score and all that kind of stuff and understand how the coaches are doing. And there's always going to be those parents that complain, you know, but when I push clubs to do this work, and usually head coaches don't want to do it because they're like, everybody's going to complain. When they come back and they actually look at the percentage, the complaints are like less than 1% of the membership. They just happen to be loud and obnoxious. So if you don't actually pull in information from everybody else, you don't really get a good read. So you're avoiding doing the right things because of one or two people, you don't want to hear them. And again, the reason why they complain is because they're having to fill the void with information. I was getting ready to explain to you when we did the survey, one parent was like, did not like the dry land workouts. So they wrote an entire dry land workout in the survey, which was, I just found hilarious, right? And it's like, come on, trust your coaches, right? You're there for a reason. They're professionals. They've been vetted. They've been hired. Sometimes they're not the best, but by and large, the coaches are really good for each club, and they kind of weed themselves out when they're not, you know, but you're always going to have that one parent. But what I want people in the audience to understand is that should not be the reason why you're not transparent, because I bet you if you actually did a poll of your members or the people that you serve, you'll find out that you're doing a pretty good job, or you'll find a theme of how, like, they're not all happy about this one thing. It might be communication, it might be whatever, you know, that might be one coach, I don't know. But if that theme comes up, well, don't you want to fix it? Why would you want to ignore it, right?
Yeah. And of course, if that's that one person who's just the loudest and they're probably the only one, well, then you can realize you're like, well, I can just ignore this because they've got some issues that they need to work out with themselves.
Yeah.
This has nothing to do with us. Everybody else seems to be super happy because they've gotten this survey, they've given the feedback, et cetera, which means that loud complainer is just being obnoxious to be obnoxious, and they've got nothing else better to do. And you can go on and move on with your day, address it, go away, and it's going to be fine.
And that's an area where the board and the coaches need to be on the same page, speaking the same language. I tell them all the time, in front of the membership, you are on the same page. If you know, when you get behind closed doors, you can argue about a decision that was made or not made. Okay. But when you're in front of the membership, you support both sides of the house, because for whatever reason, parents are like kids and they'll go, oh, I'm getting in there. I can get them on my side. Right. So you can't allow that type of behavior to happen. So being on the same page with the same message, like for that one complainer or the group of complainers, you know, we support the coach's decision. This is in his remit. This is what he's supposed to be doing. This is, you know, in the best interest of the organization, whatever the answer is, but they're all on the same page, right? We get that you don't like it, but we have a business to run. We're not going to change all of our practices because you don't like it.
Yeah.
There's plenty of other clubs. Go for it.
I think the phrase of the year in 24 is clarity over cleverness. And I feel like if we can just get our job descriptions down, if we can get transparency down in our organizations, if we can be communicative in an open and honest way, I think a lot of the misfires of what you said to what you meant will go away. And I think a lot of organizations can take some of the tips that you gave today, regardless of whether you're a sports team or a sports community or a nonprofit that's trying to help individuals with food scarcity. It doesn't matter. They're the same issues.
Yes.
I think makes this such a wonderful conversation here. So I know, here's the other thing too. I know that a lot of people are going to try to figure out, how can I get Renata onto my squad, even though she talks about swimming a lot. I'm swimming upstream at my nonprofit, and I need some help with my board stuff too. There's going to be some people reaching out. I guarantee it. So how on earth do people get a hold of you, Renata?
Okay. So you can go to our website, which is yoursportsresource.com. And there's several places on the site where it says book a call. If you go under the consulting page, you can see the things that we do. And again, it doesn't have to be, the site is geared towards swimming, but it's all sports or small nonprofits. We are happy to help. So you can book a really free call. We take an hour. We just go, okay, what's going on? Where are your problem areas? And a lot of times, I mean, I take a lot of calls to where people just call in and just want, you know, a path to get, or just a direction for me to go, okay, go this way, head down this road. I'll talk to you in a few months, and they'll come back and they'll tell me how things are going. But, you know, through that call, we can also go, you know, maybe I could come in and do a few things for you guys, stand in front of you, get your board on the same page, get your board and your other members or your staff on the same page. Let's do some strategic planning, whatever it is. So they can go to the website, book a call with me, no charge, just find out what we're about, how we may be able to help. And then, you know, we're on Instagram, Your Sports Resource as well, if you just kind of want to see the kinds of things we do. But on the website, there's all kinds of free tools and articles along with the things that we do. And there's client stories and stuff like that, so they can read about what other people have done with us.
I love it. Well, we'll have all of those links in the show notes. So make sure that you end this podcast and go click a whole bunch and then sign up and go and find Renata and just go. By the way, when you're on the internet, you haven't subscribed to this podcast, for shame. You should. So go do that immediately and then go back and go find Renata. A couple of things. Number one, thank you so much for your time today. There's been some really awesome insight. I think, again, the board transparency and job descriptions, just clarity, I think is just going to be so important for this year. Number two.
It's boring, but it's.
Yeah. Mundane.
You got to do it. Yes.
And then you get all your things fixed, and then you could be bored with boring board meetings chaos ensue. Number two, thanks for your conversation, your perspectives. I think those are really interesting. I love that we can take two what are seemingly separate ideas and groups, because they're the same damn thing. I think it is. Yep. Most of all, thank you so much for being a guest here on the official Do Good Better podcast.
Fundraising is hard. And as a listener to this podcast, I hope you found some insight, tips, and tricks on how to make it a little less challenging. But if you're looking for a lot more content, done-for-you templates, weekly support, and a community of other do-gooders like yourself to commiserate, challenge, co-create, or celebrate with, I want to invite you to join Do Good University. It's our brand new membership site. We're going to have hours of on-demand trainings, exclusive guest expert webinars, and access to the Do Good Better crew to answer all of your pressing questions, all for an affordable monthly fee. So visit dogooduniversity.com or click the link in the show notes